This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Jyotika Cummings,
Alison Malden,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Jyotika, we talked about your going into yoga, setting up a yoga school and so on, but what is the day in the life of a yoga teacher?
So back when I was in the meditation center, one of the things that we did, one of the routines of the week or the day, was to get up at 6 a.m. every morning and practice for at least 20 minutes sitting in meditation. And then maybe before you ate or before you drove, you would sit for a minute or so and sit in quiet and just, you know, draw yourself back into yourself, get your consciousness up, give a minute to meditation. And then,
So for people who don't know, what does meditating mean then? If you draw yourself back into yourself?
Yeah, so if you think, it's really just about becoming a little bit quiet, I think, isn't it? Yeah. And becoming a little bit more conscious. If you just get in your car, say, for example, and drive even angry or upset or mindlessly, you know, it's going to be a different experience than if you're collected and you're breathing evenly and you're, you know, aware of what you're doing. So yeah, it's that simple.
Okay. Just, and you use the term mindlessly. Yeah. So does that relate to the idea of being mindful?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We think, you know, sometimes we're more vacant or we're more swept up with our emotions or our feelings, and that might, you know, in the end, that might cause us to be a little bit more unconscious about the things that we do.
Okay.
So it's about being more conscious.
Okay. So you start the day.
So that was my practice in the meditation center. Now I'm not so strict about meditation, but I'm quite strict about my practice. And it's not a strictness. It's just that I want to be on my mat practicing. Especially if I'm teaching a class at, say, 9 or 10 o'clock, I'll be practicing from 7 a.m. for about an hour and a half. So that means I'll be on my mat and doing physical practice. While it doesn't need to be really full on, it'll be just something where I'm starting to open up the body and work with my body, and then I'll finish that with a relaxation.
So they do stretches and rest?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So life is balancing, really a constant development of yourself.
It is, really. Yeah. It is. And then after I teach, I have a free lunchtime and a free afternoon, basically, in which times I either rest or prepare an evening meal or something, because then at 5 o'clock again, I'm out the door and teaching 4 evenings a week. So my day is kind of broken up, but I have a lot of free time in the middle of the day for me. And then, yeah.
So, as an abstract, would being a yoga teacher be compatible with marriage then, if you get up at 6 o'clock?
The first one that I discussed was being in the meditation center, and that was not compatible to marriage. They didn't encourage marriage at that stage. That was for the, if you really want to take the spiritual life seriously, it was, do that, take the spiritual life seriously. Obviously, a married life is going to take a lot of your energy. Having children is going to take a lot of your energy and time, and it takes you in a different direction. But if you want to live a spiritual life, then, don't get married. For me... Now, as a yoga teacher, many yoga teachers, of course, are married. Many yoga teachers came into it later in life.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're married. They have children. They have other other responsibilities in life. But the beauty for me is that it's not a big deal for me to go out at 5 o'clock at night. I'm not missing anything at home. Yeah. So it's been a really great way to be able to run this business. Whereas a lot of yoga teachers wouldn't really want to be away from home 4 evenings a week. Yes.
I'm thinking as much as anything, though, if you're meditating from six and then an hour and a half of yoga exercises.
Yeah, these were in different stages. Obviously, when I was in the meditation centre, I had that practice of meditating from six. Now I'm in the yoga practice. It's not so strict. I can start my practice whenever I want. Usually I start fairly early, seven-ish, and go from there. Yeah. Which works in with when I need to teach, and then, it feeds into my practice. I'm much more flexible nowadays,
So how does social life... I know one thing, people who are working as chefs, for example, it means they're working late every evening and so on.
Yeah.
So family life and social life's a problem.
Yeah.
And again, I suppose with yoga as well, if you're client, do you call them clients, customers?
Students, I think.
If they're working, then you have to be using their leisure time is your work time.
Yes, very much so. So it's been that's been a little bit difficult. If I want to join a singing group or something like that, then obviously usually those singing groups meet when I'm teaching.
Yes.
So that has been something I've had to sort of give up or put up with. You know, but in the end, it's not been such a big deal. I have a small group of friends that I meet when we're able to. It's not. And I have my own interests. Yeah. I've just started swimming. I ride my bike quite a bit. Mm. I do quite a bit of travel and I tramp. So.
Okay.
Mm,
Yes, your travel.
Yeah, the travel's a big part of it. It has been because the main institute for Iyengar Yoga is in Pune in India. And there was, before COVID, there was a kind of a rule you'd need to go there every 3 or 4 years just to spend a month there and do some training there. So I went there in 2009, 2011, 2017 or 15, 15 and 17. So I was travelling to India, reasonably regularly in the 2000s. And I've also led most years for the last 10 years, led a retreat somewhere in the world each year. So we've been up to Fiji, Japan, Australia, Cambodia more recently. Next year we'll go to Bali. So
the retreat is basically finding somewhere where you can do yoga and you go have a holiday.
It's a chance for a holiday retreat.
Yeah,
lots of people go on holiday and it's a little bit empty. What do you do? Drink in the morning or the evening and lie on the beach? Whereas if you go for a yoga break, you get a lovely yoga class in the morning. You can spend time with other yogis, other people interested in yoga, having fun, looking around, whatever. And then often there's an evening class as well. So people do find them really good.
So how large would your groups be?
How large? Between... 10 and 22 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, depending on where the venue is.
And who are the people? Are they mainly women or couples?
I get quite a few couples, just people who are generally coming to my classes and like doing yoga, and they then like the place that I've chosen to go to and they jump on.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Sisters, families, friends, all sorts. Mm. Young people, old people, get all sorts.
Yeah. Mm, mm. Okay.
And they all mingle in together, and they all have an amazing time. Generally, the group gels.
So all you have to focus on is you set up the accommodation, you do the, and all the rest is up to them. So you
pretty
don't
much.
Have all that.
Yeah.
Going around with an umbrella saying follow.
Yes.
Me.
No. We usually choose one place. We go there, and whether it's just a isolated place like in Fiji on a beach somewhere where they can go snorkeling and just rest. Mm. Or whether we go up to Cambodia and you're in a small town and there's sacred ruins to see, and they all have a great time together.
So is there a circuit for this that you, or you know where these places are, or you just find them yourself?
I find them myself generally. Yeah. And so I'm looking for specific things. I'm looking for accommodation that's going to be inclusive with probably a yoga room or a hall that I can use for yoga. So I'm looking for those two things. Where the group can kind of be together, where they don't have to travel far to get to the yoga room, and where there's good things around them that are going to kind of support their experience. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of now kind of resorts or small resorts that have a yoga room attached.
Okay.
So there is a little bit of a circuit that people could tap into if they wanted.
Yeah. And you don't find that sometimes that if you go into a different culture, you need someone there who can translate and so on. You need
that's never happened. No, I've never needed that. It's always been Australia, Fiji, Japan. Oh, yeah. I took my niece up, but that was also fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Often
you
I
took your niece.
Yes,
she my niece. She can speak Japanese, can't she?
Yeah, or? She was there the year before, so we were able to. She got the venue, and we took a group.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, small group up to Japan. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I often run with support people, whether it's a partner in yoga or someone who knows the area well.
Yeah.
Okay. Just as a support and to make sure the group really has a nice time and it's all well looked after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So any memorable events from these retreats? Any special place you'd think that was really
good? I'm going to mention one that I ran with my family, my mum and dad, for about 7 or 8 years, which was a yoga cycling trip. And okay. Every ANZAC weekend, we took a group down to Central Otago.
The
Clutha Gold River.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. So we would take a group down and we'd stay in beautiful townhouses in Lawrence. And we would do yoga every morning in a little local hall. That was actually my school room. And then we would jump them on bikes and use the Clutha River Trail. And they got to cycle right from Roxburgh back to Lawrence over a couple of days. And then they got to also cycle around Lawrence, which is the gold fields. Yeah. And so those were really memorable. Yeah. My dad drove the van. My mum helped, did the yoga and helped with all the props and provided treats for all the students. And the students would then go down to the local Lawrence pub and have dinner. And it was really a fun time. And I did that for 7 or 8 years. It was really fun.
And you're not doing it now because I'd just love to have done that.
Yeah, somehow it's lost its... I did put it up a couple of years ago and never really got so much interest. It was a thing of the times. Now I think, I don't know, it's just different times.
But maybe not so many of people have been coming to you for a long time.
Yes. I took seven groups of up to 20 people each time, so there was a lot of people that I put through that group, put through that trip.
Yeah, Do you find then that your clients are ageing?
Yes, absolutely. They're ageing, yeah.
Yeah.
But hopefully, we do hope that new people come on, and they do come on. It's just a matter of keeping them.
Yeah. So is it a matter of that there's not quite the same interest among young people, or young people are going to other younger yoga classes?
Maybe a little bit of both, but we never really did get a lot of super young people anyway. If you think of people in their 20s, they will be passing through Palmerston North. They might be at Massey or they might be working, and then they move on. So I do see young people, but they just don't stay long term. And then you think of people in their 30s to 40s, what are they doing? They're having their children, they're paying off their mortgage, they're really busy with life, there's a lot of stresses, and the more we go on, there's more stresses for them. So they don't have time to get out the door at 5:30 and go to yoga class. So then you're left with the older generation. People get to 50 and they realise, oh my Lord, I need to do something for my body. And so then they jump in and they're a bit more serious about it. That has always been the way. So you're always going to get this revolving thing, and people have different needs at different ages.
Okay.
Needs and abilities.
So so what's your view of the state of people's bodies as they're aging now?
Oh, it's
now?
Definitely... No,
is it a
even,
problem? You see it
it's
as
definitely
an issue?
A problem, yeah.
Are they less mobile and flexible now compared... Well,
yes.
We're living longer.
We are living longer.
And they do
longer.
Say we're healthier. You don't think so?
I think we've turned the curve...
Yeah,
and we're on the decline.
Your hand's moving down now.
Yes. Yeah, so young people are less fit.
Yes.
Their posture is worse.
Yes.
They're less able to do things.
Yeah.
That's from a young person's point of view.
Yes.
The older people, I think they're being more troubled with health issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not so physically active as they might have.
I just think we're being hit with different... I think that the immune system isn't so strong. There's more cancers. There's more things that are hitting us. I think our diet is not so good.
Diet's
gone going
worse.
Backwards. Yeah.
Probably you've seen people who might have died before, but they're surviving longer with all these.
A little bit of that. Well, they say nowadays at the moment, 1 in 5 is not working on some sort of allowance. 1 in 5.
Oh, you mean of working age people?
Yeah. Because so people, a lot of people are on disability or sickness benefit, or they can't get a job full stop. So that's quite a lot. So we have to look at what's going wrong, I think.
Now, there has been a move for, say, older people at risk of falls and get them into Tai Chi and so on. Is there anything like that happening with yoga? So government funding or assist or pushing people in your direction?
ACC has, in the more recent years, opened themselves up to some trauma yoga, mental health yoga.
Trauma yoga.
More mental trauma. They're treating people who have mental problems with some yoga.
So how does that work?
Very gently.
So you just say you have these people and you just slowly get them into yoga.
I don't do it.
You don't take it.
But there are some trauma yoga courses that people can do, and then ACC will pay them. They'll pay people who have some more mental issues, I think. To do these classes.
So what about balance and falls? Because that's a big thing they're pushing us, right?
Of course. And so, and even just building people back up after balance and falls. And yes, ACC will give some funding for that, but I don't do that either because it's very full of paperwork. Okay. Just to get ACC funding.
Yes, okay.
So I don't follow that line.
Yeah.
It's quite hard work.
So if you like the spiritual aspect and the meditation and so on, how do you feel about the business aspect? You're running, you're a self-employed businesswoman with tax returns and GST and all that. How does that, does it conflict with your essence?
I think we've all yoga teachers have had to just find a way to manage around that, and you just try and stay balanced. And if you are really pushing the business, of course it could probably make a lot of money if you're really savvy with your internet and social media and all that sort of thing. I'm not so savvy, and I'm not really pushing, like I said. I'm 20 years into the business, and so I'm just rolling with it now.
Do you have people who handle a lot of the
financial? I don't.
You do all that? You say,
I do it all,
software and so on?
Yeah, I just use Xero and an accountant.
Okay, yeah.
So I keep it pretty light-handed,
Now, so you've been teaching for 20-odd years, which means you were in business right through COVID.
Yes.
How did that affect you?
Oh, it was very difficult, because the community was completely splintered in the way that it thought, vaccine or no vaccine. It was fine while before the vaccines didn't come in. We were quite protected in New Zealand. But after the vaccines came in, we were very divided.
And what about in the well, did you go online?
I did go online, and many yoga teachers went online, and so I did do some online, and I have continued a little bit to have a camera in the room where people can still do online.
Okay.
It's definitely not the best from a yoga or social perspective. And yoga is a very social discussion, I think. It's not about locking yourself away into your room. It's about this interrelationship between you and yourself, and then other people.
My concept of it being social would be you go there, you do your yoga, then you go for a coffee, et cetera. Is that what you mean by the social, or is it doing yoga together somehow? There's a dimension to that.
There is definitely a dimension to that. And I think what teachers realised when they opened up their Zoom class as well, this is great, I don't need to leave home. But I think they realised once they got back into the school that, and the students realised this as well, oh, now someone is watching me. Now I really need to, you know, I need to actually step my game up at home. Maybe I could have gone and made a coffee in the middle of that Zoom class.
You'd have the camera off and just...
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
and so if the phone rings you or you get an email, you just check what it is.
So going into the school was a whole different level of focus, concentration, and, you know, so,
Yes, the COVID situation wouldn't just be the vaccine, no vaccine conflict, but the fact that you couldn't hold classes.
Couldn't open the school, no. Couldn't pay the rent, all those things. So it was very challenging.
Did you get government assistance through
there? Was government assistance, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And did you get many people going online?
I got a good number online, yeah. Okay. Yeah, for a certain period of time.
Yes.
It worked well for a little while.
Yeah.
But of course, once we went back into the school, there was always the challenges of, you couldn't, everyone had to be on their absolute best behaviour and not cough.
Because
you might spread a bug.
So were you wearing masks while in
no,
class?
We never, no? never did. Oh, some people might have, but we never, I never resorted to
never
that.
Required.
No.
Yeah.
I think we were past it by that stage, but still it was very restricted in that people were very nervous about catching a bug.
Yeah, and some people got used to doing it online, and you said you carry on with that now, do you?
It was technology.
Do you still have classes online?
I do. It was technology that was developed at that time, and now there is the push to still offer it. And what I have in my school is a robot that watches me. It follows me. It's just a little camera.
It.
Yeah, it's a little camera that I've got an infrared thing on me, and so the camera will follow me.
Yeah.
And so someone, if they want, they can say, I want to do the class by Zoom today.
Yeah.
And they can, if they're away or something, and I can link them into the, and then they can watch the class.
So it follows you. So you move around the class while you're teaching?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting, because I didn't realise how it worked. And I thought, given the situation, how do they actually see them?
So I've got a microphone on me, so it catches all my voice, and the camera follows me, or I fix the camera on someone who's doing a reasonable job.
with their permission?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't really mind. It's,
Okay.
There's never a lot of people online, just one or two maybe.
Yeah.
And another aspect of what you do is, all right, there's self-development, there's classes, developing people, but there's also people that you're encouraging to become.
Yes, there's three or four people that have now stepped up and said they want to take their own practice further and they want to teach. So some of them, one of them's a bit more advanced, she started her teacher training many years ago, but she wants to now maybe sit her exam and get certified, and there's a couple of others that are just coming up from the bottom. So there's that part.
And so do you work with those people one-on-one?
I work with them as they come in maybe every fortnight, and I'll spend a couple of hours with them at this stage, and we go through some exam practices. We go through the different things, and that would be philosophy, anatomy, physical practice, maybe some pranayama breathing, and I'm sure there's one other thing which has eluded me, but
which
we covered different things.
One of the interesting things that every student is different, every body doing some teaching is quite different.
All the different teachers come through there and bring their own personality and their own understanding of what they're doing.
And how they stitch a class together.
Yes. I mean, and that is part of what Mr. Iyengar teaches us, how to best stitch a class together in some ways, you know. Physically, psychologically, mentally, there's all these different aspects to how we teach and what we try and incorporate.
Now, something I know, there's a lot of talk about gender these days in all sorts of different areas, but is yoga sort of gender? Do you get many men going? And is there a difference in men's and women's, either the sort of yoga they can do or their attitude to yoga? Or have you observed anything there?
Of course, we get quite a few men coming through now because they are also aware that their physical fitness might be breaking down and that they'll benefit from yoga. So, yes, I get about one third men probably.
Okay.
And is there a difference? There is a difference, of course. They have different needs. Of course, from a woman's point of view, that a woman goes through her menstrual cycle and then menopause, and that's all taken account of in yoga. There's a structural difference between the men and the women, but overall they're just the physical aspects. to me, it's there's a deeper aspect, which is our mind and our emotions, and they're not unsimilar, I would say. Not unsimilar.
Yeah. But in terms of flexibility or strength and so on, does that
I mean, probably the men have worked their muscles more, and so they're going to be more muscle-bound or more tight, and so they might have a little bit further to go with flexibility. Yeah. But that's not always a bad thing, because it can make them more stable.
Okay.
They have more stability, whereas when you have more flexibility, you have to really build your stability.
Yeah.
So each thing has a different positive and negative, I guess.
So if someone's coming for the first time, do you see a difference in attitude by men and women? Or
between men
perspective
and women?
On it?
No, not really. No. It's just, that's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
Everyone comes with their own mental and physical body and their own attitude. And it's different all the time.
So, and where do you see this going, in that you just carry on as long as you're capable of doing
it? I think so. I think we might be limited by the building at some stage where we, the building, I don't know, maybe the water gets cut off and so we'd be out, you know. So far, we have managed to keep it coming, keep it viable.
But you've moved to other premises?
We could move to other premises, but it's not that easy. A lot of landlords want a lot of money, and it's a big move. So maybe I'll set up something somewhere along the line. We're hoping that someone will also help us with that. But that's a work in progress.
And it's important to be central city, you think?
I like to be central city. I'm not really... And some schools run out of their garage in a suburb, but it's just not quite my style.
But you mentioned it, Palmerston North isn't quite so strong for yoga teachers.
It's not for yoga teachers, no. It's not. A lot of yoga teachers are quite young women, say, and so they might want to live somewhere like Nelson or Hastings, Napier, kind of trendy towns, Tauranga or something like that. Palmerston North doesn't really attract that type of person, so it hasn't been easy to attract yoga teachers to here in Palmy.
But having lived here, you find Palmerston North is...
It's amazing. It's been an amazing supportive structure for my business. It's not super busy. There's not... People aren't going here, there, everywhere, so that they can just choose. Yoga's a great place for me. You know, there's not a great deal of options or you know, other things to do. So, yeah, no, it's been great. Palmerston North's been great for building the business and for continuing to support me in the business.
And I suppose compared to a big city, people don't have the long commutes, so they can turn up at half past five.
Exactly. They have time and space in their day.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.